Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A new head at OSHA, and coming from the Mine Workers Union, you know he's all about safety. Meanwhile, more wins for organized labor, striking Kellogg's workers speaking out, and today on the show, Climate Jobs Illinois and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Welcome to the Wednesday, October 27th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and most recently, Stitcher. So you have many ways to access this show we call America's Workforce. Gina Walsh is going to be our first guest on the show. She is the Deputy Director of the Heat and Frost Insulators, LMCT. That stands for Labor Management Trust. And she's going to talk about Climate Jobs Illinois. This is something that Pete Almini, who usually is in this segment, brought up some months ago, and they were talking about legislation in Illinois, and finally, I guess it passed. What is Climate Jobs Illinois? We'll get into that. What's the purpose? Well, I'll tell you briefly here. Make sure that labor's issues are included in any legislation, and that goes across the board all around America. The legislation is SB 2408. We're going to take a look at some of the most important components of the bill, how it will help promote union members and endure that they are treated fairly as the state of Illinois transitions to a carbon-free society. Illinois, by the way, relies heavily on nuclear power plants as a source of clean energy. Now, how will this new law affect the nuclear power plants? And there's a lot in this law. 900 pages. So we'll touch on some of them. It's my understanding that electrical charging stations are also part of this bill. So good stuff. And it's all happening because of people like Gina Walsh making sure that those union components are part of the legislation. John Murphy, on behalf of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, will be joining us later in the show. John is probably one of the most prolific union members that knows about what's going on with the multi-employer pension plans. And the Teamsters know the hardship here because, and this is a subject we've addressed for many, many years. It goes back about 7 or 8 years when the financial markets collapsed back in 2007, 2008, and 2009. A lot of the pension plans took a major, major whack, especially the multi-employer plans. And Congress had an opportunity, I believe it was the end of 2014, to fix it. They kicked the can down the road. And finally, with the new administration, this was done as part of the American Rescue Plan. So, where are we? This was passed months ago. John is going to fill us in. What's the status? And this is best known as the Butch Lewis Act. So what kind of timeline? Those of you who have those multi-employer plans are probably wondering, wait a minute, you know, they passed this legislation. What's going on? Is it still going to happen? Well, that's precisely why we brought John to the table today to talk about this. John Murphy, he's out of Boston, longtime Teamster. And like I said, I don't think there's anybody that knows how the pensions actually work and how this was worked through Congress. I mean, he was on it right from the get-go. Good guy. John Murphy will be joining us later in the show. Well, the U.S. Senate has confirmed Doug Parker as Assistant Secretary of Labor for Occupational Safety and Health. So he's the OSHA director. He is the first Senate-confirmed OSHA agency leader since, believe it or not, the Obama administration. A little background on him. He worked as head of the California Division of Occupational Safety and Health and helped develop California's pandemic workplace safety rules. He also worked at the Labor Department's Mine Safety and Health Administration, MSHA, during the Obama presidency as an attorney for the United Mine Workers of America, also executive director of the worker safety nonprofit WorkSafe Incorporated. Now, NCOSH, that's the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health, is elated by the news. And this is a comment from Jessica Martinez. Jessica is co-director of NCOSH. She said, it's critically important for OSHA to have a permanent leader. Tens of millions of workers are still facing the threat of COVID-19 on a daily basis. Meanwhile, as many as 100,000 workers die every year from workplace trauma and exposure to long-term occupational hazards, and millions more suffer serious illnesses and injuries. After a catastrophic failure to respond to worker complaints and a wave of workplace deaths from COVID last year, U.S. OSHA has taken important steps in the right direction. Much more work remains to be done to reduce risks and improve safety in our workplaces. By voting to confirm Doug Parker, the U.S. Senate is demonstrating a commitment to protecting workers and enforcing our nation's safety laws. And she points out, during the 4 years of the Trump administration, there was never a permanent Senate-confirmed Assistant Secretary of Labor for Occupational Safety and Health. I didn't realize that. Well, the conservatives aren't too happy about him. And this statement was released from the Republican leader of the Education and Labor Committee, Virginia Fox. She does not like unions. Let's be honest here. She said, I'm deeply concerned with Doug Parker's ability to run OSHA. He was a key architect of the controversial and discredited, I don't know where that came from, discredited COVID-19 emergency temporary standard in California, which placed dozens of unworkable and bewildering new mandates on employers that often conflicted with current science and did nothing to improve worker safety. Now, he'll be in charge of implementing Biden's coercive national workplace vaccine and testing mandate, which will have a devastating impact on workers, business owners, and our economy. Okay, Virginia. Take your medication, please. Workers who create the popular role-playing games Starfinder and Pathfinder announced last week that they have won voluntary recognition from their employer, Payzo. United Payzo Workers is affiliated with a campaign to organize digital employees, which is connected to the CWA, Code-CWA. And includes more than 39 members. These workers are the first game employees in North America to win collective bargaining rights. Now the real work begins, the union said. One of our goals is to increase wages to better match the cost of living, and that is likely to be the first topic we tackle. Some good news there. Also, Code for America and CFA Workers United have announced that they have reached a voluntary recognition agreement effective last Friday. The new bargaining unit will be affiliated with the Tech Workers Union 1010, the Office and Professional Employees. Code for America is a nonprofit organization that works to bridge gaps between public and private sectors. We're seeing a lot more organizing in nonprofits. And let's go to the striking Kellogg's workers. Since October 5th, 1,400 members of the bakery, confectionery, tobacco workers, and grain millers have been on strike at all Kellogg's U.S. cereal plants. Now, these members are clapping back at their employer for releasing a disingenuous video targeting the striking workers. In fact, they're going around saying they don't need a raise. They're making $120,000 a year. Can you believe that? So let's listen to the video here. Workers fighting back.
Personal life? You don't have a personal life. I work here every single day.
Kellogg's is a trade-off. You're living here to support your family, but you're missing out on that time.
The union claims they're forced to work 7 days a week and significant amounts of overtime. The fact is, in 2020, our cereal manufacturing employees worked an average of 52 to 56 hours per week. However, 90% of the time, employees volunteered for the extra hours.
What pissed me off when I first saw the video, because we really do work 7 days a week, 24/7.
I've been working every single Saturday, every single Sunday, Monday through Friday. Sometimes I'll get forced over because people won't show up because they're sick, vacation, whatever. I lost count how many hours I put in this plant in the last year. So say, for example, you have a family. You work from the 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. shift. You got kids you got to go pick up after school. You know you're going to get forced over because there's a lack of manpower inside Kellogg. So what we do is what we call defensive signing. That individual now signed for the 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. shift. So they will get picked up for that because all three shifts are short people. So yes, this person signed, but he would have been forced anyways.
There's a point system in place. Once you get to a certain point, you'll be terminated. Even though a person may have problems, they may have children at home, pets at home, they may have people that they're taking care of.
The average 2020 earnings for the majority of our hourly cereal employees was $120,000 per year, and more than a third earned between $120,000 and $200,000.
I don't make nowhere near that $120,000. In order to make that, you're working 16 hours a day, every day, holidays, birthdays, anniversaries.
There was threats of closing a couple of plants, so the concession was to keep all four plants running. They brought in people who are making less wage.
Basically, we're doing the same thing, just different pay, different benefits.
They have to pay part of their health care at over $10 less per hour. We get paid a certain amount of holidays per year. They have four less holidays paid per year.
I'm a third generation Kellogg's. I've been told that there's no way I'm going to become full-time. I'm never going to reap the benefits that the people before me have.
We want them to be equal with us. We want to keep that going forward for our future generations. Legacy people have a pension. Transitionals do not have a pension. We want them to have a pension, so that way when they retire from working here for 20, 30 years, they have something to retire on.
I've seen all the benefits of my grandfather working here for all these years, you know, my dad working here for all these years, then to find out that somewhere along the lines they lost their values on the employees are their best asset, it's a shame.
Again, striking workers at Kellogg's plants around the country, and they've been on strike since the beginning of October. Kellogg's, by the way, made $1.76 billion in profits last year, and they're still refusing to negotiate a fair contract. All right, we have to take a break. Gina Walsh, on behalf of the Heat and Frost Insulators, LMCT, coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. All right, let's go to our live line. Welcome back to the show. It's been a while. Gina Walsh is her name. She's Deputy Director of the Insulators, proud sponsor of America's Workforce. Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.org. She's here to talk about Climate Jobs Illinois. And Gina is a former state legislator and a state senator out of the great state of Missouri, the state that defeated right to work. a couple of years ago. We need more states to defeat right to work. Hey, Gina, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
We're great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Good, 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 good. Well, this is exciting news because I remember we did a segment with Pete Almini. My gosh, it was probably 9-10 months ago, talking about climate jobs in Illinois. And I guess we've got passage of some legislation. That this is a good, good thing here. Why don't you explain to our listeners what this is all about? Because I know it's exciting for you. It's exciting for obviously a lot of unions because there's going to be a lot of unions participating in this. So let's start at the beginning here. What is Climate Jobs Illinois?
Climate Jobs Illinois is a coalition of unions. We have members from the IBEW. Our executive board has several IBEW members. There's myself from our LMCT. We have Bill Mangan from our local in Chicago, the Insulators Local 17. LIUNA participates, the iron workers, the operators, the teachers' federations. There's over 22 members on the executive board, and our sole purpose is to make sure that when Illinois is trying to transition into a carbon-free society, that working men and women across that state are not forgotten, along with their good, well-paying union jobs with benefits.
So it's to make sure that we've got legislation that pinpoints what you just said. I'm reading that it's what over 900 pages in that bill. Is that right?
It is over 900 pages in that bill. But when you have a lot of bills are like that, Flash. But you're working on a pointed area in the bill. So a lot of it is current legislation.
All right.
Right. So we're amending on to current legislation in the Illinois Power Association bill. But we just wanted to make sure that our members, we have several nuclear plants in Illinois, people that work in those plants, in our construction areas. We wanted to make sure we weren't forgotten and our jobs weren't forgotten. And we were successful. The whole purpose was to ensure that labor's issues are included in any legislation the General Assembly would pass to achieve a carbon-free economy.
And Gina, let's talk about this transition, because as you know, I mean, there's still a number of fossil fuel plants. You touched on nuclear. Now, how is this transition going to happen? Because there's people at these facilities, fossil fuel, nuclear, as I mentioned, that are probably wondering, I don't know, I got a good job, I got good benefits, and I don't know about what the future holds. And we're hearing a lot of stories that maybe I'm going to have to work for less money. Talk to me about that part. I would imagine this is all contained in the legislation. Can you speak to that?
Well, and I'm one of those people. I did a lot of work in coal-generated plants over my career when I was working with the tools, and a lot of that work I did in Illinois. A lot of those plants are now closing in Illinois or are slated to be closed. And part of the argument was there were a few municipal coal-burning plants that were slated to be closed as well should this legislation pass. But they made amendments for those, so to speak, and worked into there that they have until, I believe, 2035 to become carbon-free. You know, technology changes every day. Years ago, it was the scrubbers they put on some of these coal burners that help them burn cleaner. Mm-hmm. So the technology can change, and there's three plants, I believe, that have the ability to remain open. One of them right not too far from where I live. I've toured that plant. My daughter has worked in that plant, and they made an exception for that and a couple other municipals across the state of Illinois to keep them open as long as they meet requirements that are set up by the bill.
I see.
So, you know, we do earn our living in these plants, and it's going to be a tough transition, but it's going to happen with or without us. And I think it's best that it happens with us and that we're part of the solution.
Well, can you talk to us about what went into this legislation as far as you mentioned how labor was a big component in all that, and there had to be a tug of war going on again. Change is not easy. there's pushback on that. Can you speak to what happened when?
There was a lot of back and forth and a lot of pushback between different groups. But this was a compromise between a lot of different unions, a lot of folks in the clean energy industry, and a lot of advocacy groups. This bill has some of the strongest labor standards in the country on wind and solar developments. Project labor agreements are required on all utility-scale wind and solar projects, and prevailing wages for all non-residential clean energy projects. It also has in their block programs funding to procure renewable energy certificates, which are tax credits, for distributed generation projects installed on public schools. And that was part of the section that I worked on, the carbon-free schools, that when you move into this transition, oftentimes we talk about the building's insulation and the building's envelope, but when you talk about that, nobody ever talks about the mechanical insulation. And if you're not making sure that those systems are in check or installed properly or installed at all, then everything you did to secure that building envelope is going up through the roof of that building. So there is a section in there that requires that a mechanical insulation inspection be done on all of these projects as part of the qualifications for the RECs in this, which is good for us.
Yeah, yeah.
So now, which is good for my industry in particular. There's sections in there for electric vehicles, charging stations. There's over $700 million in subsidies for Byron, Dresden, and Braidwood, which are three of the nuclear plants in Illinois. And that's Illinois' primary source of clean energy right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to keep those plants running, and we need to secure those jobs. Those people need to know that their future is secure.
You mentioned peat and frost insulators and the mechanical insulation. Any idea on how many jobs could be created with that component alone, or is it kind of premature at this stage to figure
that out? It's a little premature, and right now they're in the rulemaking process, but I can tell you every summer that I can remember in the 40 years that I worked on the tools, every summer there's a big push wherever you were for the schoolwork to get finished before the kids come back to school. Schools pass bond issues, and then they have this money for infrastructure or to revamp their schools or rebuild a new school. And you come in and you're under the gun to get it finished. All the crafts are to get it ready and secure and clean and safe for our students to return in August. And there's a very sharp window. A lot of times they don't leave till the first week of June, and you have to have this work done by the second week of August, and it's a big undertaking, but it's a lot of jobs. I know at least in the Midwest where I worked, so I'm sure it's the same everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. That's why you need the best workers and the most highly trained.
Right.
Yeah, most highly trained workers.
The training is the key, and you've heard me say it before. I'm really proud of the training that these individual unions and organizations provide, and in most cases, in all cases, it's free.
Mm-hmm.
It's free training, and it's the best training. We provide the training to our own members. It's no cost to taxpayers.
Yeah.
Which
you know,
I think is phenomenal.
So many people, I tell that to so many people, and they don't believe it. They don't believe it.
And you can't fix some things. There's just some things you can't fix, Flash, but I don't know what, you know, does it sound too good to be true? Maybe, but it's a fact.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And I am a product of that education system.
It's great. It really is great. You mentioned the project labor agreements are included in this legislation. Was that difficult to accomplish? Because, you know, there's some lawmakers, you got the right to workers out there, the conservatives say, hey, we can't go all union. What about that part?
Well, and it's not necessarily all union. If you know, with project labor agreements, you have to agree to be signatory for the period of that job. But then we make concessions, too, on our side. There's no work stoppages and things like that. But, you know, it was all mixing the sausage is hard. You know, there's a lot that goes into these bills, and we had meetings at least every other week with the entire coalition, but we had a strong team of folks that were there day to day negotiating with the other partners or the other interested parties and visiting the and educating the legislators in Springfield, Illinois.
Yeah.
So this didn't happen overnight. They've been working on it a long time. We've been involved for over a year now, as the LMCT has, as an organization, and I'm proud of the work they did. Some people say it didn't go far enough, but you know what? You have to open the door before you can walk through it. So
it's funny you mentioned the sausage making process. Imagine the sausage making process in Washington right now when they're talking about this reconciliation bill. That's got to be monumental. But that's another story.
Yes, it is another story. But I know how that process works. I've been involved in that process, and it's not easy for the people that are there on the day to day activity when you're in that Capitol working on these bills. I can remember hours up to 2-3 in the morning arguing and passing a bill on the floor and trying to get it finished and negotiating. And people think all they're doing up there is arguing. And sometimes that's what it seems like, where you hear people filibustering on the floor. Well, while they're filibustering on the floor, there's people in another room that have vested interest in this legislation trying to hash it out.
Yeah, yeah.
And get it all ready and, you know, where it needs to be that everybody's happy. And not everybody is going to be happy. And they always say that if nobody's happy, you must have a good bill because you negotiated it, right? You know, if you're not all pleased with the whole thing, then you have a good piece of legislation. And that's what negotiation and compromise is all about.
I hear you. Gina, I got to take a quick break. Gina Walsh is joining us on our live line. She's Deputy Director of the Insulators LMCT. Mechanical Insulators LMCT.org is her website. We're talking about Climate Jobs Illinois legislation that passed, and we can thank organized labor for making it right. We'll continue our discussion. In fact, I want to touch on those charging stations. John Murphy, on behalf of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, as you know, the American Rescue Plan bailed out the multi-employer pensions. So what's going on? John Murphy is going to address that. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you are exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we are now available on 6 different platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, most recently the platform known as Stitcher. So when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. And we always appreciate a 5-star rating. Gina Walsh is joining us on our live line today. She's Deputy Director of the Heat and Frost Insulators, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce. She's with the Labor Management Trust, Mechanical Insulators, LMCT. She's deputy director there. And we're talking about Climate Jobs Illinois. We talked about this with Pete Almini months ago, and the legislation has passed. And we can thank people like Gina Walsh for making sure that the labor components are in there. Prevailing wage, project labor agreements, all those good things. 900 pages in the legislation. If you don't mind, I'd like to touch on these charging stations. As you know, the legislation that they're trying to work out in Washington, the infrastructure bill, it's my understanding that will deal with the charging stations. And a lot of the automakers, I'm reading here, they want to produce 1 million electric vehicles in less than 10 years, 2030.
Yep.
You know, we need a lot of charging stations, Gina, if that's going to be the case.
And that would be a lot of work for the IBEW and other crafts. And there's over 80, you know, with the state rebates funding up to 80% of the charging station installation and requiring prevailing wage on that installation, that's going to be great for the trades.
Yeah.
There's, you know, 1 million vehicles is a lot of vehicles by 2030. You know, 2030, that sounds like an odd date. That's 8 years from now.
Right, right.
You know, we are going to, and I believe one of the manufacturers, and I was shocked, I forget who it was, said they're going to be completely there within 10 or 15 years.
That's amazing.
Just announced it this week, and I don't want to put a name to it, but I was really surprised myself. It just seems to us, or somebody in my generation, so science fiction, but it isn't. This is real.
Yeah.
And this is what's going to happen if we want to save our environment. So as I said before, we can either get on the bus or be left behind, and I choose to get on the bus. I want to be part of the change.
Gina, you talked about the rulemaking process. I mean, this took a lot of hard work to get where we are today with Climate Job Illinois. And let's touch on the rulemaking process, because that can get quite complicated. Can you give us any glimpse into how that's going on now, how long it's going to go on? Go ahead.
You know, although Senate Bill 2408 has been signed into law, the work isn't finished. The next step is the rulemaking process. And this is a process in which executive and state agencies interpret and create rules to implement the new law. It's important that Climate Jobs Illinois Coalition remains intact and involved throughout this process, just to ensure that the law is interpreted in the spirit in which it is drafted and written. Illinois will also be considering other legislation in their session coming up right now. In the middle of their session, they're in their veto session, and I don't know if they're going to bring up what they call the EV bill, electric vehicle technology. So it's important that we remain engaged and be a part of this rulemaking. You know, I've experienced passing a bill and it just sitting there on the shelf and the rules not being promulgated so that you can enforce the new law. You don't want that to happen. And you want to make sure that the rules are written, that you're not heading down a road 3 years from now and say, wait a minute, but we took care of this issue in the Climate Jobs Illinois bill, and you find out that the rules were made up differently than what the coalition expected them to be. And it comes back to bite you, because it's not done the way you need it done. But this is part of the process, and once it gets through and they've promulgated these rules, it should be good to go. And I think it's good legislation. Does it go far enough? Maybe not. Some people think that it goes too far. Did we get everything we wanted? Nope, you never do. And that's part of the negotiation and compromise process.
Well, Gina, you're a pro at this. You've been in the legislature. You've been on the House side, the Senate side, in the state of Missouri. Any idea? I mean, if you can give me maybe a projection on when this might be completed, when this tug of war kind of finally finishes itself off. Any idea on that?
Well, you know, I'm a newbie when it comes to the state of Illinois, so I'm not sure how their process works, but I know it took quite a while, over a year, for them to promulgate rules in Missouri on some bills, but that was a different political makeup. And it seems to me that everybody's on board with this this bill, and everybody's excited that things are moving forward. And I would look to see that the state would move rapidly to meet all their goals, because, like I told you, all privately owned coal generation to close by 2030, municipally owned coal plants to reach zero carbon emissions by 2045. With a 45% reduction by 2035. So they have some hard and fast dates here.
Yeah.
So they have to get moving because, folks need to know what they're up against and what they need to do to stay viable in this industry.
Yeah, yeah. And it does give them an opportunity to get trained for the new jobs that are going to emerge here. There's no question there.
Exactly.
Another question here. Climate Jobs Illinois. Well, there's a lot of other states out there. I'm wondering, is this the first of its kind? And I'm just wondering if other states are knocking on the door saying, this is something that we have
there
to do.
There are other coalitions across the country. Climate Jobs it's a national resource center, and there is a coalition. I know in New York, I believe in Connecticut, there is one. There's four or five coalitions across the country, and they've had some successes in those coalitions as well.
Have they had successes like you had in Illinois, though?
Not had successes like, I don't believe that the labor standards are as strong as the successes that have happened in Illinois.
Gotcha.
So we're pretty proud of the legislation.
Well, you should be. You should be. This is monumental. It's really great. Really great. Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to wrap it up on that note. It's good to hear from you. It's good to see that you're working hard and you're seeing some fruits of your labor here. So let's do this conversation again and find out, especially when you see some solid rulemaking going on and making sure that everything is contained in the bill as you wrote it. Let's do that in, I don't know, maybe 4, 5, 6 months down the road. How's that sound?
Okay. As we wrote it, it takes
as
a lot of
it.
People to get this stuff done.
That's right. Hey, one more question here. I know you got to run, but any craziness going on in the state of Missouri, like right to workers trying to introduce new legislation? Because I know it was overwhelmingly defeated some years back. Anything on that?
Not right now, but December 1st is when pre-filing of bills begin, and I'm sure that there will be some anti-worker bills filed here in the state, but there's a good coalition of folks in Jefferson City, Missouri, that are going to work hard to make sure that they don't go anywhere.
Very good. Very good. They always pop up, don't they?
They yes, never they stop. Do, and they always will when you have term limits.
Yep. All right, we're going to leave it there. Gina Walsh, Deputy Director of the Insulators, LMCT. You can find more at mechanicalinsulators.lmct.org. Great news out of the state of Illinois. Climate Jobs Illinois passes, and the rulemaking process is currently underway. You take care, stay safe, and we'll talk down the road, all right?
All right, thanks for having me.
Quick break. John Murphy on behalf of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters talking about pensions. That's coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac?
If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That's AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show, John Murphy. John is a vice president at large for the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Been a Teamster all his life. And I'll tell you, no one is better on the multi-employer plans than Mr. John Murphy. I mean, he saw this happened years ago, and he's been trying to fix it. And finally, when we got the right people in office, it's fixed. But where's the money? That's where we need an update. So we went to John Murphy. Hey, John, how are we doing today, brother?
I am well, and how are you, Flash?
Good. Appreciate the sponsorship on behalf of the International, too. Teamster.org is a website. All right, we're talking about the Butch Lewis Act, which was part of the American Recovery Act, passed and signed into law by President Biden. So what's the status here? Can you fill us in on where everything is right now, John?
Sure. The statute provided that the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which is a quasi-governmental agency that oversees single-employer pension plans and multi-employer pension plans, publish regulations for the process of filing applications for all the multi-employer plans that need special financial assistance. And on around August 9th of this year, around July 9th of this year, the PBGC filed some regulations on that. And what they did, given the constraints of the statute, which says that once an application is filed by a pension fund with the PBGC for the special financial assistance, that agency has 120 calendar days to review, process, and approve the application, or obviously disapprove. So what that agency did is they prioritized all the multi-employer pension plans out there that that agency believes at some point will need special financial assistance into groups of priority, with the idea that they won't be overwhelmed at once if all the funds file their applications at the same time. And that's an idea that makes sense, given that they only have 120 days to review these applications, and the law demands they either approve or disapprove by the 120th calendar days. So the first group that filed were plans that had already become insolvent or projected to become insolvent before March 11th, 2022. And that included plans, one of the more famous, if that's the right word to use, plans, Local 707 out of New York City, which had gone insolvent but not terminated under the current law before the Butch Lewis Act was passed, had dramatically reduced benefits for its retirees and participants. They were the first one to file their application. And they did that in the late summer of this year. The next group that's due up to file, and they can file anytime January 1st of 2022 or even later, was pension plans that had filed for benefit reductions under the Multi-Employer Pension Reform Act of 2014. and those suspensions had been approved. So they're the next group that can file. Then the third group, and this is the one that your listeners slash probably are most interested in, it's a critical and declining status pension plans with greater than 350,000 participants. That's central states. They can central states can file anytime starting April 1st, 2022. And then there are three more special priority categories. Quickly, the next number four is funds that are projected become insolvent before March 11th of 23. Funds that are projected to become insolvent also before March 11th, but in 2026. And then pension funds that would have a liability, meaning special financial assistance of more than $1 billion, that would be on February 11th of 23. And then all the critical plans that are less than 40% funded and have a ratio of it no greater than two active participants to three retirees. So that's the lineup. And obviously all applications have to be filed no later than December 31st, 2025. That's the lineup that the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation has laid out. And I suspect that all the plans have already started preparing their applications. I am pretty sure that Central States has been working on its application for months and is ready to go. Now, all these dates that I mentioned of when applications can be filed, if the preceding groups have submitted their applications and the PBGC has worked its way through, they may in fact tell these groups, most notably Central States, that they can file earlier than the April 1st date for Central States. And I do know that retirees across the Midwest and the South who are in Central States have been getting anxious about, well, when is this special financial assistance coming? It'll happen sometime in 2022, but Central States and the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation understands this because of the months since the passage of the Butch-Lewis Act has been obviously paying full benefits, what people are entitled to. So their assets continue to decline. All that means is the special financial assistance will be larger than the amount if Central States had been allowed to file in the summer of 2021. So they should not have, retirees should not have to worry about, well, when is the money going to start? It's coming. Really a very brief explanation, Flash, of the status of the timeline of the money being distributed to the pension funds.
Wasn't this like $86 billion that's part of that rescue plan? Wasn't that the amount?
Well, the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, has indicated that their estimates will be approximately that. It could be closer to 90 by the time the smoke clears, but the statute is very clear as to the amount of money that needs to be given to the pension fund. Enough money that at the end of a 30-year period, which would be December 31st, 2051, all these funds should have received enough money to pay 100% of benefits to current retirees, future retirees, which are active members, And at the end of that 30-year period, they remained solvent. So that's the intent of the statute, and clearly that's what the authors had in mind on this particular provision.
Well, when the government is going to dole out that kind of money, you know, it's going to be a rather complicated process and time-consuming. So it sounds in our conversation here, this is going to be rolled out in about 4 years when you take a look at it. And rightly stated, it's like worst comes first. You mentioned the group. Where was that? That they're insolvent like at the beginning of next year? They're going to be taken care of right away then?
Yes, yes. Insolvent, but not terminated plans. Their window to file is open. The next group is those plans under the Multi-Employer Pension Reform Act that have already cut benefits, then uh-huh. central states. And, you know, so, yeah. So the process is ongoing right now. And it may seem like a long time to retirees and active members, but it's all designed so there's not a log jam of applications all at once, because the PBGC doesn't have the staff to handle all the applications if they were filed at the same time, and that's why they established this queue.
Well, John, it sounds like that's our next campaign. We got to beef up the PBGC. What do you think?
Well, we might have to, you know, and yeah. But you know, it's been, as you know, Flash, and I thank you for providing the International Brotherhood of Teamsters with the forum to talk about this issue. This fight started way back in 2014, and there was a lot of ups and downs for our retirees and members, and we really galvanized legislative branch of the United States government around this issue. Our efforts, the retirees with the IBT, we made this issue a top priority for the Democratic Party. And the Democrats understood this, and particularly the leadership, and they remain committed to this issue despite all the setbacks we had when the Republicans controlled the House and the Senate. And the White House. And as soon as those numbers changed, as you said in your opening remarks, Flash, the Democratic Party, the leadership of Nancy Pelosi, Richie Neal from Massachusetts, Chuck Schumer, the majority leader, Patty Murray in the Senate, and Ron Wyden in the Senate, they put this bill into the American Recovery Plan, and the president signed it in early March of this year. So we brought it home, and it's all because of the activism of our retirees. Could not have happened without their willingness to become a powerful lobbying force in their home states and in Washington, D.C. Without that effort, this never would have become law.
Well, I always say the squeaky wheel gets the oil, and I'll tell you, the workers were loud and proud about what needed to be done, and the money is happening. It's good that you laid out that timeline. This is going to take some time. We're talking about a lot of money, almost $90 billion here, but it's all good. It's all good, and we can thank the International Brotherhood of Teamsters for making it happen. John, it's always a pleasure. I knew I'd get all the answers from you. We got a lot of people wondering what's going on, and you told them. So you take care. Stay safe. Best of the holiday season, and we'll do an update down the road. How's that sound?
That sounds great, Flash. Good to talk with you.
Take care. John Bye-bye. Murphy, Vice President at Large for the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. What a great guy. Teamster.org for more information. That's it for another edition of the show. Coming up tomorrow, Bill Samuel of the AFL-CIO and the latest from the Better Business Bureau. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.